Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
All right, I think we have James Bovard joining us now. I think we've been able to make connection. Can you hear me, Mr. Bovard?
Yeah, I can hear you. Sorry for the delay on my side.
No problem, no problem. Things happen. It's great to have you on. James Bovard is an introduction. In case you don't know James, he's been around for quite a while and writing many, many books. How many books have you written? I talked earlier about
10.
One.
10. Okay. 10 so far.
And you're still working on them. I love the one I talked about earlier, Attention Deficit Democracy. I love that title. And, of course, you're always writing for various publications, the Mises Institute, a libertarian. You wrote write on all things political and economic. And so it's great to have you on. And I wanted to talk earlier in the show, I talked about biometrics, and you just recently had an article about facial recognition and things like that. I talked about a case where someone was arrested and jailed simply on that. They always talk about how biometric surveillance and identification is just going to be a starter into their process, but of course we've seen that it's worked out very differently. It's extending in so many different ways. I think your article was about TSA, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I've smacked TSA around a lot over the last 20 years, and
they deserve it. They've smacked us around a lot whenever I
fly. That's true. I mean, hey, it's payback, you know?
That's right.
I'm just trying to settle my debts from those airport checkpoints. yeah, so this is on the TSA facial surveillance. TSA is starting to set up all these. They have set up a bunch of places and airports where they're people check in by having their face scanned. And it's on a trial basis now, but the TSA is probably going to try to mandate that nationwide sometime later this year.
Yeah, it's always this mission creep, isn't it? And the creeps who are patting us down and all the rest of this stuff. When I was in Texas, they had the House put in and passed it unanimous, said you're not going to have these body scanners and you're not going to pat kids down when that first rolled out. And I don't know if you recall, but they said, well, if you don't allow us to do this, we're going to make Texas a no-fly zone. And they got that shut down when it went to the Texas Senate. The lieutenant governor there at the time pushed back on that. But we subsequently found out, that was in 2011, that they had said in some TSA documents, because one guy who pushed back against the machines and the violation of privacy in a lawsuit, he got discovery, and they mistakenly put up that in 2011, the TSA said in their own documents, there's no threats to airports or airplanes. And that's the same time they're telling everybody, we've got to roll these things out and we've got to do all these things. So they're constantly pushing this, but it seems like the biometric database and biometric collection is really what they're focusing on right now, because they're rolling out in every way possible a digital ID for everyone worldwide. That seems to be what the focus is right now, major thrust.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's interesting. That's a nice bit, a good example from 12 years ago. People should not forget back when these whole body scanners that take nude photos of you were first introduced. TSA said that would be voluntary. Then it became mandatory, and TSA used punitive enhanced pat downs on people who did not voluntarily go through those whole body scanners. I had some memorable experiences with that made some lively articles.
Me too. Every time I fly, I refuse to go through it. I want to make it difficult for them. And they tried to make it difficult for me. They make me go stand by the x-ray machine. I refuse to stand by the x-ray machine. So I get the enhanced pat down and all the rest of the stuff. But it's gotten to the point now with all the COVID and masks and everything, I've just decided I'm not going to fly. I'm not going anywhere. They went.
Yeah, it's a frustrating business. I mean, it's increased a fatality rate, because you've had a lot of people have the same reaction that you do. They are driving instead of flying, and, mm-hmm. and the accident rate for driving is much higher than flying, though there's less aggravation from TSA. So that's had an adverse effect on public safety. There was a lawsuit by the Competitive Enterprise Institute that tried to challenge the TSA mandate for the whole body scanners based on the increased accident rate from autos, that people would be shifted over to driving because of to avoid the scanners. And the federal court found some reason to dismiss that lawsuit. But no, I mean, TSA's exasperating in so many different levels, but it is very secretive. It's very difficult to get information from the agency as far as what it's actually done. The TSA encourages people, if they felt like they had been mistreated, to file a complaint, but then TSA makes it very difficult for journalists to get copies of those complaints. So it's like, okay, so you're just throwing your complaint into a black hole.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. They should have to, we shouldn't have to prove to them that we are no threat. We shouldn't have to prove to them that there's going to be more accidents on the road. They should have to prove to us they have a constitutional authority to do something like this. That's the real issue.
Yeah, that's a great point on the constitutional authority. And here again, it's one of those Washington, D.C. shell games, because the thing TSA has said in court is that there is no Fourth Amendment issue as far as warrantless searches, because people have voluntarily submitted to be searched at those checkpoints. However, TSA also says that if you aren't searched, you can't fly.
That's right.
So, I mean,
and if we allow those types of things to happen, that's the same kind of prevarications that they were using, saying, you know, I'm not mandating any vaccines for you. I'm just telling you, you know, you got a choice. You know, you can have a job, you can have a life, you know, if you take the vaccine. And if you don't, you won't have any of those things. But it's not a mandate. I'm not forcing you to do anything. I'm not coercing you. It's like, oh, course. Yeah, you are, you know.
Yeah, it's funny to see how the history is being rewritten as far as the COVID policies. There was a piece in the New York Times a day or two ago claiming that there had been no lockdowns here in the U.S. And I mean, this is like, you know, how much further is this fantasy Orwellian stuff going to go? It's like, you know, we never shut down the schools. Yeah. The kids could have come. You know, this is...
I love a quote that you had. You said, shutting down entire states with COVID lockdowns was the equivalent of burning witches or sacrificing virgins to appease angry viral gods. And I think we know who those angry viral gods are. They're the NIH and the FDA, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's very important to keep Mr. Fauci happy. So, and Fauci won lockdown. So voila, you know, we were locked down and it, you know, it helped his, you know, bonuses for his books or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was talking earlier about Trump's rediscovery of the war on drugs.
Oh, that was going to prosecute that. You know, that sounds very uplifting.
Yes, yes. I said, okay, boomer. You know, this is something that's failed for over 51 years, and somehow he's going to make it work, even though he didn't do anything with it in his 4 years. But again, that's another one of these things. Where's your constitutional authority for that? I think it's very interesting to see how this war on drugs just continues to go on. And this is what concerns me about COVID and all of these legal prevarications that they use to establish this. I keep a running total from, you know, and there's other things that were done in the buildup to this pandemic lockdown. But I focus it back on the day that he declared the executive emergency, declaring a state of emergency so he could slather money all over everybody to do all these nasty things, March the 13th of 2020. We're now 1,030 days into this. And of course, Biden has piggybacked his own tyranny on top of that executive order. And nobody is talking about getting rid of that. Now, there's a few states that are talking about, well, we need to start looking at executive orders, but really nothing is being done about that. What do you think?
There have been some challenges in court. I mean, I don't know how far they've gone and what exactly they've managed to get struck down at state level. It's, you know, it's amazing how docile most people have been to the federal power grabs on this pandemic. And you have Biden, you know, pulling one rabbit out of the hat after another. And Biden's claim that thanks to the pandemic, he's got to forgive $1 trillion in student loans. Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of thing that, you know, should not have passed the laugh test in the White House, But maybe the White House is so accustomed to getting away with so much nonsense, it's just like, well, sure, let's just, you know, let's take this and run it up the flagpole and see if we get away with it in federal court.
Yeah, there's been so many grabs. I mean, you've got the CDC saying we're going to suspend all evictions and foreclosures because of this. And the way that that continued to go on and on and on. And again, it was a bipartisan thing. They initiated that under Trump. They extended it under Trump. And you had, Trump appointee at the Supreme Court said, well, you can continue this even though you don't have any authority for it. Then finally, they said, well, we're going to have to stop this because they extended it past their deadline that they'd promised to stop it. But I guess when we look at this, the overall trend that we see is that there just absolutely is no more attention whatsoever paid to the Constitution or even the rule of law. You've got now the precedent of doing gun control by executive order. I mean, how do we pull this back? I mean, do you think that there's I'm looking at this political theater that's going on right now in the House as they're having the votes on the speaker, and it's going on and on and on. But they have talked about a real issue, and that is that the Congress is totally dysfunctional, even compared to the dysfunctional Congresses of history. They've always been locked.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it was Congressman Chip Roy who was saying that it's been like 4 or 5 years since they had a vote on the House floor to amend any of the bills.
Yes.
Because everything is just jammed through. It's a total facade of a representative government. What's interesting is to see the panic of a lot of the mainstream media over the delay in choosing a new speaker. And it's kind of funny because Biden is going to make his speech today at 2 o'clock as his second anniversary of January 6th, and he's going to basically paint everyone who was there as a terrorist or as a terrorist supporter or whatever. I mean, that's a label the FBI has used for everybody they've charged for January 6th for parading inside the Capitol.
Yeah.
It's a strange form of terrorism, but the
parading without guns. Yeah. That's
a part of what fascinates me is that the media has bought into the Biden line that there was some grave damage done to America because there was a 5 or 6 hour delay in confirming the results of the 2020 election. And I'm thinking, well, if that somehow hurt America, then okay, so we've had like 3 or 4 days going trying to choose a speaker, and I don't see how it's done any harm at all to America. But I mean,
well, you have Brian Kilmeade at Fox News calling them insurrectionist. I mean,
an insurrection. Yeah,
that's what he called them insurrectionists, and his co-host said, "Well, I don't think they would want that. I think we should call them saboteurs or something." It's like bombs or something.
Okay.
I don't know if that's any better than insurrectionist, but that's what's happening now. 2 years later,
I mean, the thing that shows is how so many people will have a comfort blanket from just the notion that Congress is in charge and that Congress will keep an eye on things. I mean, Congress has done a miserable job of oversight for almost forever, but certainly since 9/11.
Oh yeah.
And I don't see how it makes any difference if there's a speaker. And I mean, it's probably going to work out. No, I shouldn't say that. I got to respect the defamation laws. I don't understand. I don't understand how folks are waiting to be comforted by the selection of by having some politicians vote for another politician, and that's somehow going to keep us safe and, you know, somehow make the government's going to serve us. You know, it's bizarre.
I'd like to see them go the full 2 months like they did in 1855. We could at least keep the government shut down for 2 months. That'd be one way to do it. But, you know, when you look at what Chip Roy was saying, he was saying we've been completely shut out of the process. This is something that's being done by, you know, 4 or 5 people at the top or whatever. And we've seen, and people have talked about, this is something that, you know, we first saw under Pelosi with Obamacare, where they bring in this several thousand page bill and they say, okay, yeah, we're going to have a vote on this in 24 hours. And it's like, what? You know, how can you do this? But the reality is that that's just the tip of the iceberg, that absurdity. The other part of it is that even if they found something in there that they didn't like, they've shut them out of the process on the floor to make any changes to it. So it's completely dysfunctional, and they have shipped everything over to the bureaucracy anyway.
Yep. And it's interesting that there's either little recognition of that by the press corps, or else the press corps doesn't say anything because it basically supports the idea of putting government on a pedestal, and average citizens don't really need to know what the government's doing.
That's right. Yeah. Talking about a bureaucracy, you've got an article, Biden's bloated IRS will skewer taxpayers. This is one of the issues that has been sticking with everybody. This, you know, growing the IRS by what, eightfold or something, 87,000 new agents, and Kevin McCarthy trying to get support, says it's going to be the first thing I do is get rid of this. He doesn't say how he intends to get rid of that. You point out the media has gone to bat for the IRS. How'd they do that?
Well, it was fascinating to see how the controversy over the IRS funding bill, the Biden made a big push to have this bill to hire 87,000 new IRS agents and employees to sharply increase the amount of audits that are carried out. There's almost no focus on customer service, improving customer service, even though I think in the last year, the IRS answered fewer than 10% of the calls from taxpayers seeking help or insights on how to pay their taxes. But there was it was fascinating to see how the Washington Post, for instance, was just terrified of any criticism of the IRS. This is back when Biden was pushing the bill back in this past summer. Dana Milbank, a Post columnist, said that the GOP anti-IRS rhetoric is one of the hallmarks of authoritarianism. So you criticize the IRS and you're an authoritarian. Where did I go wrong?
Well, you know, it's been said, I forget who said it, but they said a law that is sufficiently complex is the same as having no law at all. The IRS code is so complex that a disgruntled agent can do whatever they want to you in an audit. That's the thing that strikes fear into people's hearts. And I'm sure it scares the Washington Post as well. But they don't have the courage to oppose that kind of authoritarian system. And that's the true authoritarianism, as we all know, right?
Yeah. And, you know, part of what people don't realize with these IRS audits is that in tax court, any allegation the IRS makes is presumed correct.
Yeah.
The IRS doesn't need to put evidence on the table to prove that someone had this income, which they failed to report. It's simply presumed correct. And the burden of proof shifts to the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like in a federal criminal court where the burden of proof is supposedly on the prosecutors. But so the entire system for tax administration is just profoundly biased against what's normally considered to be due process.
And of course, that is the issue with government by bureaucracy, where we don't, you know, we have taxation without representation, but we have regulation without representation. They say that if it's a rule coming from the bureaucracy, that it is not a law. And so you don't get any due process. That's the basis of civil asset forfeiture. And that's been the basis of the IRS. The IRS was infamous for a long time because they were the only agency that's doing that. But now we got all kinds of agencies that do that for all kinds of reasons. It became a central sticking point of the war on drugs. But you've seen the FAA come out and say, well, if you don't get a $5 license from us or whatever it was when they started wanting to license light drones above a certain weight limit, if you don't get that license and it's a minimal fee and we find you flying without a license, we'll hit you with $25,000, you know. And then they walk that back after complaints. But look at what has happened as people were upset about having to be forced to wear masks on airplanes. And they were hitting people with tens of thousands of dollar fines left and right because there's no protection against excessive fines, just like there's no due process and no presumption of innocence when it's the bureaucracy that's coming after you.
Yeah, and there's been nothing to curtail the bureaucracies from pulling new rules out of their hat mm-hmm. and slapping them on. One of my favorite examples is back a few years after it was created, TSA created a secret system of attitude fines, which
attitude.
True story. People can be fined up to $1,500 for showing a bad attitude towards TSA agents who are patting them down or, you know, sticking their hands anywhere. I mean, hey, it was impossible to penalize the TSA agents because the federal courts gave them a pass, but there were all these citizens would get hit with fines sometimes weeks after they took a flight, and all of a sudden, well, you know, the TSA says that you showed a bad attitude or you said this or that or the other. I mean, geez, I mean, you talk about making flying expensive.
Boy, I didn't realize just how I had skated through. I could have had a long list of those things because, like I said, every time I go through there, I say, nope, you're going to pat me down. And I don't usually have a good attitude about it either.
Yeah, and something else is that the TSA has these secret watch lists, which basically, tell the screeners to, you know, target certain travelers, and there are all these criteria, and one of which was people who are publicly notorious. So that's all it takes to be, to trigger the TSA alarm on the secret watch list. And since you've criticized the TSA many times, I don't know, maybe you'd be on that list.
I'm probably on so many different government lists. It would be really entertaining for me to do a FOIA request someday.
Good luck in your response.
I'd have to sue them, I guess, to get any information. Talk about this, because, you know, we're here on the anniversary of January the 6th. And I got fired for opposing Trump and Stop the Steal and all the rest of this stuff. So when we look at it, I've said for the longest time, I said mail-in ballots, which Trump helped to establish, were the key in terms of the election. You've got an article that's on the New York Post. Twitter files reveal how federal censors made mail-in ballots sacred. How did they make it sacred?
Well, what happened was the DHS had a branch that was pushing Twitter, Facebook, and other social media and internet companies to suppress criticism of mail-in ballots. There's a group, a new think tank called the Foundation for Freedom Online, which has done some great work that showed how some of the federal grantees were pulling strings and basically getting millions of tweets and Facebook posts and other things which criticize mail-in ballots, getting those suppressed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the key thing, I thought. You know, I said people who were going to go to January 6th, I said, you know, look, Trump helped to establish this. He didn't do anything to oppose it. That is the new wrinkle that's been added to it. And, of course, we know that elections have been corrupt in so many different ways for so long, and it begins even with ballot access, debate access, gerrymandering. You got so many different ways that they have manipulated it. But, the ability to rig electronic machines and the ability to have these mail-in ballots and all the rest of the stuff, I said, it's just taking it to an astronomically high and new level. And yet nobody wants to talk about that. And nobody wants to talk about Trump's complicity in that as well. It seems to me like everybody was complicit in that. And they have really established that as a new precedent. I don't think that's going to go away.
Well, I don't know if everybody was complicit, and there were some people who tried to push back and give warnings, especially on the mail-in ballots, mm-hmm. and things like ballot harvesting. I mean, where you've got a total loss of chain of custody of the ballot, and you just have someone show up with this basket of ballots and said, yep, people gave these to me. How do we know? Hey, you know, it's the, it's fascinating how Biden has tried to make any kind of any type of verification of voters' identity, a civil rights violation. It's like, yeah. It's so bizarre, but no, I mean, this is something which both parties have screwed up on. It's interesting how poorly that the GOP did to push back against some of the provisions that were done in the, that helped, help determine who won the 2020 election. Biden is giving a presidential service medal today in the White House to the Michigan Secretary of State, who mailed 7 million absentee ballots to everybody in Michigan, even though that wasn't allowed under state law, as I understand Michigan law. So that was a violation of the U.S. Constitution clause for elections. But, it worked out well for Biden, so she gets a medal.
Yeah, I've called it the mail-out election instead of a mail-in election. You know,
mail-out election—that's a good term.
People have always mailed in ballots, absentee ballots, if they got a legitimate issue. They've got they can't be there because they're sick or they're going to be out of town or something. But that was always a very small thing. What changed with all this was that they made it this massive scale, as you were just saying, mailing it out to everybody. And we've got a lot of cases where people were getting ballots sent to them by multiple jurisdictions because they were close to a dividing line or something like that. And it's a bit confusing the way they gerrymander the places. So I guess even the people mailing the ballots out couldn't figure out if it was overlapping stuff there. But it's just total fraud anymore.
Yeah. And it was, people, experts knew 4 or 5 years ago that the mail-in ballots were if not the biggest, one of the biggest sources of fraud in elections.
Yes.
Something the New York Times pointed out a decade ago. But for some, but there were all this string pulling in 2020. Well, it's a pandemic, it's an emergency, so therefore we don't need to verify ballots anymore.
And then once they get it in,
ballots. No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Once they get it in, they're never going to take it out. I know they want to keep the pandemic going and they're trying to bring it back with masks and all the rest of the stuff, but everybody knows, and Biden kind of slipped up and said, yeah, it's over. And we know that it's over. You don't see the public believing this. They're not wearing the mask. In China, once they got the jackboot off of them, and they're still trying to panic everybody about what's going on in China, but traffic is soaring there. The people who live there are not worried about it. But yet they're pretending that this thing is never going to go away. Once they got that little bit of authority, they're going to hang on to it forever, aren't they?
Yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating, but maybe there'll be more effective pushback. I don't know.
Let's talk a little bit about, because you've been a real champion about Julian Assange. You pointed out 4 years ago, I wrote in a USA Today column calling for Assange to receive a Presidential Medal of Freedom. Well, instead of that, he got stabbed in the back, right? by the guy that he helped. What is going on with Julian Assange at this point? Is there any hope at this point?
Well, maybe there's hope on Assange. I don't know. There are the New York Times and some other media outlets called in late November to drop the charges against him. The Biden, it's interesting, back when the when WikiLeaks made their biggest disclosures on Afghanistan and Iraq, the Obama administration looked at it and said that there was no basis for charging him with a violation of U.S. law. But the Trump administration came in and filed charges against him, and the Biden administration is pursuing those. And the ACLU and some other groups have been very outspoken that this is a grave danger to the First Amendment because you're going after publishers.
That's right. While they lionize and talk about the Pentagon Papers, and they lionize the Washington Post and New York Times and articles and in movies, they change it completely, change the narrative. Of course, they're saying that in order to get around that precedent, they're saying that Julian Assange participated in pilfering the documents, but that's the basis for the attack. But you talk about how everything is, this happened under the Trump administration, and the administrations don't really seem to mean that much. What we see is a gradual increase in tyranny. I remember interviewing Thomas Drake, and he said, throughout the Bush administration, the guy who's pushing the Patriot Act and all this other stuff, he said, they never came after me. It was during the Obama administration that they did. And then Julian Assange, who is of great assistance to Trump just by telling the truth about Hillary Clinton, then they come after him. This is the bureaucracy, I think, that is gradually expanding its reach each time. Don't you agree?
Thomas Drake was a hero. It's great that he stood up against the feds and whipped them in federal court.
Yes.
It's sad to see that it's not more controversial what the government is doing. I mean, I've been amazed that there wasn't more mainstream support for Julian Assange. There was a protest to support freedom for him back in October, and it was held at the, there was a protest in London that got 7,000 people. They had one in D.C., which I spoke at, which might have gotten 200. It was good that they did it, but I mean, it just has not had traction.
Interesting thing about it is it's a dangerous precedent. All these things are precedents, and we need to start setting some precedents for liberty. and for the rule of law. We got to somehow reverse this thing. And that's what's so troubling to see this, is that all the precedents that are being set are to take us deeper down into tyranny. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Bovard. Where can people find you?
JimBovard.com. I'm doing quite a bit for New York Post, doing stuff for the Brownstone Institute, Libertarian Institute, FFF, lots of places, and so far I haven't been indicted.
that's something in this environment. Thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure talking to you.
And thanks for having me on.
Thank you. And thank you to NN and to William Gardanus. Thank you for the tips. I appreciate that. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.